Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to HR Latte. This is Rayanne, your host. Thanks for joining me, brought to you by Dovetail Software. If you are unfamiliar with Dovetail, please visit our website, dovetailsoftware.com, HR Solutions, Help Desk, Case Management, Employee Service Portal, all about employee engagement. And to that end, I want to announce a special event that's coming up at SHRM at the end of this month on June 29th. Dovetail and Quantum Workplace will be sponsoring a poetry slam. This will be a great event to raise money for No Kid Hungry. If you'd like to find out more about it, you can visit any of our social channels or go to join.nokidhungry.org/go-to/SHRM poetry. You can also follow any hashtag SHRM poetry out there to find out any of the details about attending the event or making a donation. Thanks again for joining us on HR Latte this morning. I am continuing my series on practitioners or recruiters who go tech. And I have a very special guest, somebody who is very dear to me and always will be, Mr. Kelly Robinson, the founder and CEO of Bronbead Technology. I had the wonderful opportunity to work with Kelly for about 4.5 years. Hey, Kel, thanks for joining me today.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me along. And you must send me more information on that event you're doing at SHRM, because we'd like to sponsor that as well.
Oh, that would be great, Kelly. We'd love to have you help sponsor that. It'll be a really great event that we're doing at the Luxor. Remember when we did the wine tasting there?
Yes, I do.
A couple years ago at HR Tech. So they're being really gracious and helping us out with this event. And we're looking forward to doing the poetry slam, but more importantly, raising money for this really valuable effort, No Kid Hungry. And so let's jump in. And if you could please tell my audience about you and a little bit about Bronbead and what you guys do there.
Yeah, of course. So as the accent probably gives away, well, first of all, my name is Kelly Robinson. So I'm the CEO and founder of a company called Bronbead, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. But as you can hear from my accent, I'm originally from the UK. We launched our business back in 2001. I moved to the US in 2009 and have continued to build the Bronbead business out here. But my background is really recruiting. I started as a recruiter and a salesperson in the, I would say, pre-iPhone, but I could almost say pre-internet age, actually. And, you know, I worked in this business for a long time, and Bronbead, the company, started off as a project for a staffing business and has morphed into what now is a 15-year obsession with recruitment technology. So a little bit about me. Married to Wendy, who was on the Top Recruiter show last week, so I'm looking forward to that coming out in September. I've got two boys, Maverick and Zach, who I'll say are pretty good most of the time, but are growing up very quickly. What else would you like to know about me? I dislike snakes. I'm an avid Tottenham fan.
Meaning soccer, football.
Absolutely. But let's talk a little bit about Bronbead. So if you'd have asked me 2 years ago what Bronbead does, I would have said very clearly we are a job distribution business. We have grown over the last 2 to 3 years to really focus providing technology for the whole sourcing arena. And if you look at it, Bronbead, or if you look at the way recruiters operate nowadays, is they've really still only got 4 or 5 ways to fill jobs. You know, on one hand, they'll post a job or run some sort of commercial. They'll maybe run a search, look for somebody. They'll possibly ask for a referral, maybe use some social media, or if they're a corporate recruiter, potentially use agencies. So there's still only 4 or 5 ways to recruit. But for most companies, that means 4 or 5 systems, 4 or 5 different logins, no cohesive tracking, certainly no source tracking. And so what we do at Bronbead is we aim to bring that together as one platform, one login, access to all of the tools you need to find a candidate. And really the underlying goal for us, and I'll probably talk more about this as we go through the show, but really the underlying goal for Bronbead is that we just want to help recruiters become more efficient. We want to give you the time, or give those people the time, to actually spend and connect with candidates and not spend so much of it just looking at websites and looking for resumes. So that's really our goal as a business.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for that rundown. And yes, we saw Wendy. Interestingly enough, Kelly, I would say that recruiting, hiring, talent management seems to be in your blood and in your family. Kelly is married to a recruiter as well. Wendy was an invited guest to Top Recruiter. Very excited to see that when it comes out soon. So let's dig into our questions, Kelly. I want you to tell me a little bit more. Let's talk about launching Broadbean. What was it? Now, you were a practitioner for, what, 20 years? You were a recruiter for about 20 years?
A number of years.
Oh, you're so funny. Okay, so what was it that, what was the impetus behind launching Broadbean? What was the purpose? And if you could tell us maybe a little bit more about the depth behind the solution. What does it solve? What is the issue that it solves for recruiters or HR?
Okay, so let's start with what it solves. There's two words that probably, you know, make up our DNA, and those two words are efficiency and friction. So number one, we've always looked, how can we make a recruiter more efficient? You know, because there are so many demands. Average recruiter, I mean, certainly in the corporate world, I looked at something recently, said that, you know, they're all carrying 20 recs continuously. So efficiency and friction. Friction is we're looking for where there's the disruption in a process, and we can help solve that through the use or the application of technology. So that's really core to us as an organization. And it really was launched from that point of view. We had a bunch of recruiters that had transitioned from putting adverts in the press to using job boards and were spending more and more of their time copying and pasting and putting jobs onto different sites as opposed to actually meeting and interviewing and connecting with people. And so we looked at that and thought, well, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be an opportunity to use technology to do that, and just built a really rudimentary, basic, take one job spec, send it to 6 or 7 site system. So that's literally how we got started.
Okay. And you went about launching this tech company, so mm-hmm. and having this basic understanding as a practitioner, somebody who's been recruiting, somebody who's been involved in the hiring process for many years. If you think about the role of the practitioner, the selector, or the buyer of HR technology, is there any kind of advice or tips that you can give recruiters or HR professionals? What should they remember when selecting a product that works for their company? Now, Broadbean has a few competitors out there, so mm-hmm. you know, let's put a little twist on this. What is it about Broadbean that would drive a buyer to want to purchase Broadbean? What should an HR pro or recruiter look for when selecting tech?
So I think there's a number of things, but the one thing that really strikes me is if I'm looking to buy technology, is to really think, what do I want that technology to do? My experience has been, we often see companies that come to us with an interest in buying technology, and I'm sure for our competitors we'll see similar things as well, and then they want to change that technology to fit a process that they were trying to set out to change in the first place. There's kind of a comfort with the way it used to be done, and so I think, what problem are you trying to solve? How does this improve what you do at your organization, and will that fit into my process, as opposed to taking a piece of software and trying to morph it back into an existing system? So for me, that's a really big thing. I think you really need to understand the underlying problem that you're trying to solve. Be really clearly prepared that change takes time to work its way through an organization. And Ryan, you've seen this, and I'm sure you see it, and I'm sure many other people see this as well, is that the minute you try and change your process, there is initially there's always going to be some form of resistance, and accept that fact. I would say they're probably, you know, 2 or 3 of the key things I would look for in buying systems. The other thing is just really ask the company, does this company fit the culture of organization? Do I think I can work with them? Am I comfortable they're going to be able to deploy and support the software? Are they going to be able to help me with that change process? Are they going to be able to answer the questions that are likely to come up as a result of that? So I'd look to all of those things. And to your point about competitors, and I don't want to get into kind of details of, you know, features and so forth, but for me, providing epic customer service, epic customer support has been a real core competency. One of the things that is very dear to us here at Broadbean.
Yes, I have witnessed that firsthand for the many years that I worked there. The customer support team was the busiest team in the house, and that's because Broadbean is a very feels very strongly about making sure their clients are supported and get what they need. You mentioned culture, and that is a really interesting twist. Does the organization that you're selling into, will they appreciate the culture of Broadbean? I don't think I've ever spoken to anybody that has mentioned that, and really understanding that you need to really know who you're selling to, right? We talk to salespeople all the time who are asked to listen really carefully to the buyer. What do they need? Not just what they need, but can you fit with them? Is there a fit there? Are they going to want to respond to you? Are they going to want to talk to your support team? Are they going to want to get back to the sales team when it comes time for renewal, right? It's really an important thing. And frankly, I think that's one of the most important things I've heard during this series. So thank you for bringing that out. So let's flip the coin on this, Kelly, and talk about people who are practitioners now, those that are HR professionals now and are thinking of moving to the dark side, as I've been referencing this on the show.
Are we building up for the Star Wars theme?
Right. Moving to the dark side of the force and have decided that they want to take their practitioner experience and put it into a tech environment and either launch a company or, like me and several of my colleagues that have been a practitioner for many years and have decided, I want to go take my experience and have it be a benefit to an HR technology company. What should a recruiter or HR pro remember when starting or launching a company? What's the most important thing they should remember when deciding to launch an industry-specific tech company?
So I don't think there's necessarily one thing. A bunch of things jump out to me. So first of all, and probably because this is close to my story, but first of all, find something that's a problem that needs to be solved. You know, if you look at, and we'll maybe talk about this later on, but if you look at one of the reasons why a lot of businesses fail is because they bring a product to market and there's no market for it. So is there a inefficiency?
Right.
Is there a problem that needs to be solved? And something that's easy to describe and people can understand really quickly. So for me, start small. Start with that one thing that you think you can bring a solution to a problem and build around that. These are a couple of things that are just hard dear to me, right? So I often meet with people, as Ray, and I know you've seen this many times, people that are launching software businesses, and the first thing they do is walk in and go, can you sign my NDA? And I just say, please, a bit of advice. You know, you don't need the NDA at this stage. We're not normally talking tens of millions of dollars of VC capital. We're talking practitioners that have got an idea that want to go and create something.
Right.
And for me, the value is in the execution, not necessarily in the idea. So please, no NDAs. However long you think it's going to take you, double it, maybe treble it. I'll give a good example of that. So when we first launched Broadbean, and bearing in mind this was a technology to take a job and post it to 8 or 9 different job boards, so pretty basic, straightforward thing. And then we sat around the table brainstorming, and we're like, you know, this is a great idea. Everybody that wants to send one to many, we could solve that problem. So we could post cars, we could post houses, we could post boats, we could do motorcycles. That was 15 years ago, and we're still not finished with jobs. So however long you think it's going to take, double it, because it's going to take you longer. I'm a great believer in understanding. I mean, I'm a practitioner, but I also love technology, as you know. And I think I'm a great believer in understanding enough about code and not necessarily at the intricate level of actually being able to write it yourselves, but at least understanding what can and can't be done, having a basic idea of how long things take, being very careful about who you choose as your technical partner. Because I think if you're coming from the practitioner industry and you found a gap or a hole that needs to be solved, and honestly, we do need a new generation of companies coming through, because if you look at all of the HR conferences recently, we see lots of iterations of existing, but not so much so much groundbreaking stuff coming through now. So I think it's time for that next generation of software to come through, and I'm excited and looking forward to that. But I think, you know, coming from the practitioner industry, then understanding building systems and finding a good technical partner is paramount. I think understanding that marketing isn't necessarily going to put food on the table, and that you're going to need to get out there and sell it, and you need to validate it, and you're probably going to need to go and knock on doors and do things that you wouldn't necessarily always plan to do. I think there's quite often I meet people that, you know, seem to think that we can do a quick marketing campaign, get some Twitter press, and all of a sudden, hey presto, you've got 50 paying customers. It's never that easy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Do you think it's valuable for a tech company to have practitioners on staff?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Well, if we're talking HR tech, then absolutely. Because I think, you know, having an understanding of how the industry works and what people actually do and the problems you're trying to solve, and being able to put that into a real life situation is important. But I think there's a whole bunch of other things. I mean, sorry.
Go ahead, Kel. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's an element of luck as well, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
You know, I could look at some times in our past. I mean, I think probably, and I may have shared this with you before. Well, I know I've shared this with you, Rayanne, but I mean, I remember when we were early into our business, we were probably, 8 months in, maybe a year in tops, and we were at that real tipping point where we were at the end of our overdraft. We'd already burnt through our Series A investment. For us, Series A investment was maxing out our credit cards, because literally it was self-funded, and then it was put on, you know, you could have almost said sponsored by Visa at one point. So we were at that turning point where this business is either going to work or not. And at the time, there were three or four companies in London, in the UK, doing the same as us. And there was this price war going on. It was, you know, people, oh, we'll provide your service at, you know, £10 a month. And obviously, it doesn't take much to work out that you can't run a business if, you know, a B2B business, if your rate card is £10, $15 per company per month. So my partner at the time said, okay, let's, you know, informed decision, we're going to massively raise our prices. And we went to a particular pitch, and I think, you know, companies around us were quoting $4,000. We went in with a quote that was in 26 or 27, huge difference. Company called us up and said, why are you charging so much? And we sat them down and said, look, this is what it costs to run our business, complete transparency. If you want us to be here in a year or 2 years' time and provide you support, that's why we charge X amount of dollars, or pounds, as the case may be. And we won that piece of business, and that was absolutely the turning point for Broadbean. That was the point that made us a serious contender and allowed the company to grow. So, if you know, I'm sure everyone's got the same stories, but one kind of pivotal moment in our history where it was the difference between was this company going to make it or not came down to that one deal. And we went in at four times the price of everybody else and won it. So transparency, and a little element of luck, I suppose.
It's risky, right? It's risky to – that was a risk for you to go in and say, hey, we're worth it. I know what we're worth. I know that, you know, it may seem more than what our competitors are asking. And this isn't to say that everybody should go and quadruple their prices, right? If they find themselves on the brink of shuddering, you know. So why do you believe, Kel, that you have found success? Why has Broadbean been successful? Is that same turning point, is that the turning point where you might have failed? Or do you think that your tenacity would have somehow won out in the end no matter what?
I don't necessarily know about failed. I think it might have been the turning point where we may have decided to give up. Because if the industry – and it's about, you know, I mentioned before about is there a market for what you do? Well, maybe there was a market for what we do, but if the market for what we do wasn't prepared to pay the costs for actually us to provide the service and the support that we wanted to do, then would have become a point of thinking, is this really a viable option, and should we pivot, to use the word, into a, you know, in a different direction, maybe to cars or boats?
Yeah. And were there ever moments when you wanted to fire a client, or did you fire a client?
Yeah, we have. It's a really good question. I mean, obviously, if you take away the elements of people that didn't pay, which is an obvious decision,
right?
You know, I don't want square pegs in round holes, because all that happens is you get unhappy customers, and then you get unhappy teams because they're trying to do a good job and keep people happy. But if the system's not exactly what people want, or to my earlier point, if they're trying to transition their system to support a process that they originally set out to change in the first place, then that hasn't worked for us. So there have been occasions when we've sat down with companies and some huge organisations and simply said, hey, we're not the right platform for you. This is not the right match. And, you know, let's move away.
Have there been any decisions you've made that you can look back on and say were a mistake?
Oh, many. But I'm probably not going to reveal them now.
No. I'm not asking you to reveal them. So how do you take that and turn it into a lesson and benefit Broadbean in the long run?
I think everybody learns from their mistakes. You know, when we started Broadbean, we didn't even have a website. So we really, and it was in the real early days of, you know, tech in
of
the
internet,
HR
yeah.
space. Yeah, I'm not that old, but taking
no,
the HR
it,
space.
Every business was using the internet, right? So it was early days
right,
of when everybody
so,
was starting to recognize that, how important
that's
the internet
right. there's so many. That's right, and there's so many more resources now. There's so many more people to learn from. That we were there at the point where we were kind of making some of this stuff up as we went along. You know, nobody had taught us how do you build a European technical business, because you know one of the things we faced really early on being in the UK was, you know, you move 100 miles or you fly for an hour and you're in a different country, different culture, different language. So we had to embrace, you know, things like Spanish and French and German really early on, much earlier than most companies tend to. And in those days, it wasn't just as easy to go out and say, okay, translation, boom, done. We had to. These were problems we had to solve ourselves. So I think we made lots of mistakes in the early days. We tried to launch in countries. So when we first launched in Holland, we didn't necessarily get that right. So lots of learning, lots of mistakes that we've made over the years, absolutely.
Yeah, and obviously we want to learn from them. One thing that's come out of this series that I've done is that you either as a technology company, as a technician, when you launch a new company, you are either out to solve a problem or unfortunately create more problems. Do you agree?
I think I agree with the first part. When you say create
well,
more
I
problems.
Mean, some technologies don't benefit, right? And if they aren't benefiting, then they're creating a problem for the organization that decides to move forward with them. So it's one of those catch-22s, right? You've either got to really help solve a problem or you're just creating more problems for the organization. If you don't listen, and that's one thing that you have been imperative about is really listening to the client. And you've mentioned a couple of times now how important it is for there to be a cultural match between the client and the provider of services and software. So that's a really interesting viewpoint, and I'm very happy that you shared that with us. Any really good story you can share about launching Broadbean and the really great things that have happened for you, for your family, for your organization, for your employees?
I mean, there's probably endless stories. You know, I'm now living in California, 300 days a year sunshine, which coming from London is phenomenal. And that's come out of, you know, this organization. You know, I've met some fantastic people. I've managed to work with some amazing people, yourself included, over the years. So that's been a real experience. There's one funny story, and Ryan, you know this, but I'll share it with the listeners anyway. So to go back to my point earlier about the, and this may be an urban myth, but it's a story that's been around Broadbean for the last 14, 15 years. So I do believe that it's actually true. So we go back to that story I said to you a moment ago where we put a contract in at 4 times the price of everybody else.
Right.
And the this particular company was owned by a Japanese parent, and this is, you know, 14 years or so ago. And the urban myth is that the reason why we got the deal wasn't because of our 4 times the price, is that the executive saw the name Broadbean and thought it was amusing that anyone would name themselves after a Japanese bar snack. So I don't know how true that is, but maybe that's my luck. I thought that was amusing and signed the contract, so maybe that's my lucky element. That was Lady Luck was shining on the sun that day, and that was the pivotal point.
And to that end, tell us how you came up with the name Broadbean. I know the story, and I've been asked it multiple times, and so I've shared it multiple times, but I would love for you to share it here on HR Latte.
And you know what, Ryan? We should have come up with a far more, you know, glamorous glamorous message around this. But the honest truth is that this company started off, we just bought a random domain because we needed a domain to build the project, and it was firebean.com. Yep. I don't actually know what I did with it. I've seemed to have lost it on my travels.
Aww.
And I was at home that evening. I was talking to Wendy. And as you know, Wendy's in recruitment, like I guess many people in the industry, we met at work. And I was talking to Wendy. I said, oh, you know, we've got this Firebean project. It's really exciting. And I was telling her about it. And she turned around to me. She went, I really don't like the name Firebean. You should call it Broadbean. I'm like, Broadbean, that's really cool. I like that. So we went off and we bought all of the UK domain names and then eventually had to acquire the .com, and some young 18-year-old lad from, I think, Milton Keynes managed to make himself a nice payday on that domain name. So fair
play
to
him. There you go.
Yeah, so nothing super glamorous. It was my wife's suggestion and a huge contribution to us as a company because we spent the last 15 years. So that contribution is what's named us for those years.
Oh, man, there were so many times, too, when I worked for Broadbean, how I wished that we still had that domain, Firebean, because there were so many fun things we could have done with that as well. But
I'd love to know what we did with it. I don't remember, you know what, I think I probably just let it expire, which is a shame, really. Didn't think about it at the time.
A lot of those domain sitters, you know, do that. They end up losing them from after too long, so... Let's talk about your own future, Kelly, your future as a service or product provider. When you consider you, Kelly Robinson, as somebody who provides services for Broadbean, for Career Builder, for your clients, for the clients that you serve, for your employees, can you share with us some key things that you do in order to do your job more effectively, more efficiently? You are an excellent leader. Your employees adore you and are loyal to you to a fault. So if you could share something that you do, what is it that Kelly Robinson does so that he can do his job the best way possible?
So I try to... I'm taken aback by that. Thank you, by the way. It's a nice compliment. Okay, so what do? I try to constantly... We talk a lot about what's in our top five. What are our top five issues that we're facing right now? And I focus every day to try and work on one of those top five issues. Some of them can be solved immediately. Some of them can be solved with resources and people. Some of them just take a little bit longer. But focusing on the top five is one of the things that is what I do day to day. The other thing I think you need to do is keep focusing on making your clients happy. And, you know, we've gone through this huge expansion since we joined with CareerBuilder a year ago.
And I've often
described it to people as it's almost like a dragster ride. You know, we can see the end of the quarter mile strip. We've hit the gas, and I'm trying to steer this thing while it's kind of pseudo going out of control. Because, you know, we've grown as an organization tremendously with the investment, the resources that CareerBuilder have put into the organization. And so what's constantly been in that top five is how can we continue to make our customers happy? And I'll be honest with you, if you took a net promoter score on us now, I bet it's less than where it was before, just because by virtue of the fact that we've scaled. But it's absolutely in my top five. It's probably top one or two. And we are constantly working to get back to and improve and really give people that epic support. So that's important to me. The other thing that's important to me is my team happiness. Nothing more demoralizing when people look at me and say, you know, I've had a really bad day. You know, fairly stressed out today. I want a culture where people enjoy coming to work. It's really important to me. I want people to be open and transparent when things are bad, to be able to talk about that. But I also want to celebrate the good things that we do. So one of the things I do, and it's something we've done for many years at Broadbean, is we have our, probably the best way to describe it, Ryan, is like our TMZ meeting. So we do a meeting on Friday.
Right. Right.
And it's an opportunity for
stand-up meeting.
Absolutely. But it's an opportunity for us to really remember that even though you've had a stressful week, even though you've worked long hours, even though you've really been engaged, you know, there are things, there is information that comes back in. And every week I'll take, you know, emails that are coming from clients and I'll pick them up and I'll read them and I'll remind people of all the great things that we do as an organization. And it's kind of developed its own subculture. So, you know, each team will talk about the things that have happened for them that week. And it's a great way to keep the communication flowing. So as the company's got bigger, it's still a really good opportunity for us to kind of engage with our teams and each other and remind ourselves that, you know, we are doing some great things. But, you know, sometimes in any technology company, I guess you're going to have problems, but judge yourselves on the way you handle those problems, not on the fact there are going to be them.
Well, Kelly, I can tell you from personal experience that you do all of those things very well. Team happiness. I'm lucky enough to still have many, many friends that work at Broadbean. A lot of new faces, of course. And, you know, I stay in contact with the tech team, you know, where I think we're going to all get together for lunch next week. I think it's really important to maintain those relationships over the years because you never know who will help you or who you can help in the long run.
Exactly.
And that's been the case for you. I value our friendship, our relationship over the years. Tom, my husband, said to me not too long ago, you know, I would love to see you find what you had at Broadbean. And luckily, I've landed at a really great place, and Dovetail is a wonderful organization. And that Tom saying that said, I've never seen you happier than when you worked at Broadbean. You loved where you worked. You loved the people that you worked with. And that is key to success. For any organization to find success is if the people are happy in what they do, and it trickles down from the top. Trust me.
That's right.
You have a great impact on your organization.
And I think also you've got to kind of recognize, and certainly it's become easier for me as I've got older, but you've got to recognize the things you're good at. So, you know I'm not a detailed manager. That's just not me. So I try and look at it and go, well, what are two or three things that I can do to contribute to this business every day? And I kind of break them down into I've got my top five issues, but then what else do I need to do? Well, I need to create growth because growth brings opportunities, and opportunities is, you know, good for everybody that is part of this organization. I need to clear roadblocks. You know, a lot of what I do is looking at where is the problem? You know, why is somebody not able to do a fantastic job because there's a roadblock, and how can I get rid of those roadblocks? Because, you know, in any organization, sometimes you look at it and go, why do we do things this way? Why didn't we change that? So my job is to figure out where those are and get rid of them. And the other thing is just to be that custodian of company culture. I think every company needs their identity, needs a separate, you know, needs their own kind of culture. It's part of the reason why people stay with your organization. And I don't like to replace, I like to develop and give people opportunities. And you know, I could talk about this all day, so perhaps I should let you move on before we run out of time.
Well, we are getting toward the end of the show here. Before we hit my quick hit favorites, any last words of wisdom for our listeners out there, either folks that are, you know, have just recently launched a company, which, you know, we've have a few guests that have been on the show this month that have just launched companies, any last words of wisdom for them, or any last words of wisdom for HR in general, anybody out there that is looking at technology?
So there's a quote that I like, and it's an unusual quote, but it's written by Bill Crosby, and it basically said, "I don't know the key to success, but the key to failure is trying to please everybody." And that kind of struck a chord with me, and I kind of like always revert back to that because you can't be everything to everybody, and this is this whole square pegs in round holes is find the people, find the organisations where you can solve pain and build a relationship, because then you'll build recurring customer base. And so for me, that's really important. So I like that. So I don't know if it's words of wisdom, but it's a phrase that I've got in my office, and I really like it.
Well, you know, Cal, it goes back to everything that you've shared today. And the, you know, the gist of what you have shared with us today is to focus, right? Focus. You have your focus on the five. You've talked about the things that are important, and make sure that you focus on those things. So I really appreciate you being on the show today. Now we're going to jump into my favorite part of the show. Not that I don't like the part we just had, but this is the part where I really get to learn about my guests and understand the things that make them tick.
Okay, what have I signed up for now?
quick, no, quick, quick hit fame. So I'm just going to throw a couple of questions out there about your favorite things in life. And if you can share with us, I've learned so many wonderful places to eat and places to go. So what's your favorite food?
Indian food.
And is there a great place in Orange County, California that you go to?
Can I do a shameless plug?
Absolutely.
So, okay. So Masala Craft in Santa Ana, Tustin Borders. It's a kind of hole-in-the-wall takeaways place. Seats about 20 people. Best Indian food I've found in Southern California. Yeah, amazing, amazing.
Wow, that's good to know.
And interestingly enough, I actually met the owner on Saturday because I end up there nearly every week. But I met the owner on Saturday, and he's an IT director, so he's just investing in this business. He's trying to figure out a way to franchise it. So it's going to be interesting to see how that grows. But yeah, so Masala Craft in Santa Ana, highly recommended.
Okay. Good. I will definitely hit that place. Your favorite book. Now, this could be a book that's been a long time favorite, or something new that you're reading right now that you're enjoying that you could share with us.
Probably one of my favorite books is a book called Chicken Hawk, and it's about a young Huey pilot in the Vietnam War. And I found it a fabulous read. My kids have all read it, so I really got to nominate that one. But aside from that, I think I've read everything from Anthony Robbins and things like Headspace and all sorts of stuff. But yeah, Chicken Hawk. Everyone should read it.
Chicken Hawk. Okay, Chicken Hawk. Do you recall the author's name?
Off the top of my head, no. But it'll be in Amazon.
Okay, great. Chicken Hawk. Great. Your favorite place in the world could be Broadbean offices. It could be
Ryan, you know
a remote
the answer
location
to this. And I know you're going to groan when I say it, but it's, for me, White Hart Lane Stadium, Tottenham, England, home of the world-famous Tottenham Hotspur Football Club, which was my weekly passion before I moved to the US.
I'm sure that you miss it and they miss you. I'm still fascinated how a whole stadium can remember or know the words to a song that nobody's practiced or... It's just fascinating to me how a group can get together and just become unionized, sort of, in that effort. So, I hope you get back soon.
I'm sure I will do.
Okay, and last but not least, your absolute favorite thing to do.
So I'm going to call it. So it's basically Wing Chun, which is a Chinese-based martial art. It's something I've done for years. It's something I practice 2-3 times a week. It's a complete balance and change from my day-to-day job. Some people play golf. I like to throw people into mattresses.
Yeah, that's.
I'm pretty good at drinking wine as well, actually, Rayanne, to be honest.
Yeah, and to that end, Kelly, if you haven't joined the Virgin Wine Club, you need to do that. It's Richard Branson at his best. It's awesome.
So, I need more wine in the house. Thank you.
Yes, you do. Well, Kelly, thank you so much for joining me today. Kelly Robinson of Broadbean Technology has joined me today and has shared just some great information and great advice about launching or selecting a technology company. I look forward to seeing you, Kelly. Thanks again for joining me today on HR Latte.
You're welcome. Good to speak to you again, Ryan.
Take care, all. And remember, SHRM Poetry. You can find out anything you need to know about this great organization, No Kid Hungry, and how we, some HR professionals and HR techies out there that are actually trying to raise funds so that nobody goes hungry in the United States, especially a child. Childhood hunger should not be a thing. So we're trying our best to help eradicate that. If you search out hashtag SHRM Poetry, you'll find anything you need to know about how you can donate or how you can attend the event in Las Vegas, Monday, June 29th at the SHRM Conference. Take care, all. We'll talk with you on Thursday when my guest will be Perry Blake Gorman of Archively and Unroll Me. Thank you.